And good afternoon, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I am your hostess, Phyllis Pricer, and you're listening to BBS Radio's The Higher Dimensions. And we welcome you this beautiful, beautiful spring day that is threatening rain in Washington, D.C., but I'll bet it's gorgeous anyway. It's lovely and the flowers are blooming. And today I have a repeat guest because we didn't get enough spoken about the last time is Scott Blum, Waiting, the author of Waiting for Amber. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. It's actually
You're
Waiting
welcome.
For Autumn, but thank you.
Waiting for Autumn. What did I say? Amber.
So Waiting for Amber.
What? I wonder why.
Maybe you know something that I don't know.
Maybe I know something you don't know. I have to tell you, when I make a Freudian slip, there's usually a reason.
Yep.
But I was looking at the book, as I said, Waiting for Amber, and I'm seeing the word Autumn. Don't know why. Don't know why. Maybe there's an Amber in your life, or maybe because Amber has special healing powers.
Yes,
you
probably.
You know, Amber is supposed to be a special healing stone, and it's, of course, very, very old. You know that.
Yes.
Good. It's obtained from the resin of trees that were around millions and millions of years ago. And
it's beautiful.
It is. It is. And if you can find an insect or creature that has been trapped in the amber for many years, it's a very expensive piece to buy. I know, because I have a little fly or a bee of some sort in amber that I am really very, very fond of. But maybe that was a Freudian slip for a reason, so you might meditate on it and see what happens.
Yes, I'm sure that I'll be coming into amber shortly.
Huh?
I'm sure I'll be coming into amber shortly.
That would be wonderful. That would be wonderful. And it might, I had a feeling it was a person, believe it or not. But it could be, it could well be the gift of a piece of amber. That would be wonderful.
Yeah,
at
actually,
any rate.
It just came to me that my father's first child from a previous marriage is named Amber. And,
really?
He was on his way to go and visit Amber before he comes up to visit my firstborn, Oliver, in the next month or so. So maybe that's something.
Maybe there is that connection there, and it well could be. Because Amber, I wanted to say before the last time we were on, believe it or not.
Mm.
I had to correct myself. So something is important there, and I'm not sure what it is. But keep an eye out. You never know.
Yep.
I answered the phone week before last, right before Easter, a friend I hadn't heard from since before Christmas and at all. And I picked it up and I said, so when's the wedding? And there was this dead silence. She said, I beg your pardon. I said, so when's the wedding? Isn't that what you're going to tell me? You're getting married? You're engaged? She said, how the hell did you know? Last time I heard, they were broken up. I just knew who it was. And I knew that, and she had just gotten her engagement ring the week before. So sometimes things just pop out of my mouth, and I'm not sure if I should keep my mouth shut at times or not. Maybe that's a good idea. Because I've certainly surprised some people by turning around and saying blurting something out, and I get this weird look in return, you know, and they begin to hug their purses closer, like maybe she'll steal it as well. You never know. At any rate, the book, as I said, I read and I loved it, and I'd love to read your next book because I think there'll be another one coming out. And
yes.
At any rate, we did discuss some of the things we'd like to go over today. One of the things I just want to bring up quickly because I think the subject matter you brought up is going to take most of our hour. But I was reading in Edgar Cayce about people and their flow of inspiration and creativity and psychic impressions. It can be strangled by fear. And that's what a lot of people are experiencing now in the world, is fear, economic, emotional, personal, but a lot of economic failure. And a lot of people become so wound up and caught up in that emotion that they literally cut off the source that they would like to receive for knowing what's going to happen in the future. And that's why I wanted to discuss or just mention that if we allow fear to creep into our waking moments and into what we do, there's fear there's not going to be enough, fear that we're going to lose what we have, it's going to influence whether or not you're going to be open to receiving the inspiration that comes, the creativity, the and I say inspiration, God speaking to us, our angels speaking to us, those who've gone before talking to us, to give us some help and guidance when we ask for it, because sometimes we're so busy importuning God and our friends and our angels and those who've gone before that we don't shut up long enough and we hit with emotional buttons so that we can't hear the responses. You know, it takes a 2x4 welded very firmly over our head sometimes to get our attention, and even that sometimes doesn't break through because we hold so much fear so close to us. So trust that you who are good, you who do that which is right and just, trust that you're not going to be abandoned and left alone. And also, look into fields where you have expertise for the greatest inspiration and guidance. What you work with on a daily basis is probably going to bring you the greatest inspiration and the greatest wisdom and knowledge when you seek it. It's more likely that it will be a helpful phase for you to know that when you ask for help in some arena that you are familiar with, that you will receive what you ask for. It's not going to be denied out of capriciousness or cruelty or unkindness, but it's easier for you to gather inspiration from a field that your own conscious mind has knowledge of. Would you agree with that, Scott, or you don't have an answer or an opinion in that area?
No, actually, I have a lot of opinions in a lot of what you just said. I would say that the first thing that I would like to talk about is what you started with, which is fear.
Right.
I wholeheartedly agree with you that you could definitely get paralyzed by fear, but it's also good to acknowledge that fear is one of our best allies as well. Fear is a good thing, actually. It was designed to help us get out of danger, and what it oftentimes does is it consumes us completely. So, for example, if there's a car coming at you and you're in the middle of the road and you see it, you're going to be consumed with fear. It's going to take over everything, and if you're thinking about, you know, what you have for lunch and what you need to do next and you know, being enlightened and all of these other things, you know, your yoga class, your meditations that you're going through, it completely consumes you in order to get you out of the way.
Right.
And so first of all it's good to acknowledge that fear is actually a good thing, and it's not something that we want to subvert completely and to shame ourselves to saying, okay, I don't want to have fear at all. So it's good to say, okay, a little bit goes a long way, though, when it comes to fear. Mm-hmm. And because it's so powerful, we don't want to indulge in it. And I have in the past have indulged in it to the point where it's completely paralyzed everything that I'm doing because I get addicted to the whole fear emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
I don't allow myself to move forward in other aspects. So, the first thing is to acknowledge it's a good thing, and then the second thing, as you were saying, don't let it consume you, and acknowledge that when you're not at that place where it's useful to you, then you don't need it. And so that's the first... Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, I was going to say, I agree with you. What you were saying to me is fear as a chemical reaction is you need to stay alive. Yes, I should have been perhaps a little more clear about fear, which you mentioned. That is to make it a part of your everyday life in what you do and say and how you react to things.
Right.
Obviously we agree that is something different. Yes, if I see a truck coming towards me, you better believe I'm going to have a lot of fear until I remove myself from that particular danger. So I need to be a little bit more clear about what I speak, and thank you for that.
No, I think that it's not just being clear, because I believe it's the same reaction, and I actually believe that it's very helpful to us, and it's not simply a chemical reaction, but it is an emotional and soul level reaction as well of protection.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to feel nurtured and we want to feel safe, and a lot of times we actually and it's almost in some ways like a drug addict. You know, a little bit goes a long way. If you're in pain and you take a drug, it's going to relieve that pain. But if you take too much, you become addicted to it, and then you can't move on anymore. And so, so that's I think what a lot of us do is we feel that safety from fear, that it makes us feel safe, because saying no is, it feels like it's safer than saying yes. But in actuality, that's when it goes overboard, and then you become stuck, and then life begins to pass you by, and then all of the things that you're saying is very, very, very detrimental to us and to our spiritual development.
Well, I've seen fear becoming so all-consuming that people become paranoid, and they become terrified of any and all authority, that type of thing. Everything in moderation, as Casey used to say, seems to help. You know, a little bit can go a long way, but it's, one uses common sense also in life. And there are times that, you know, it's to help us move ahead, and there are times when, as I said, it becomes an altar at which we worship, and that's when we need to be discriminating on that factor. But I agree with you, you know, wholeheartedly. A couple of the other things that we were going to discuss, and I think that are just absolutely fascinating, was soul retrieval, which could consume hours by itself, and ancestral
healing.
Yes, and I think that's something that a lot of us really don't think about or talk about much. I'm familiar with it all, but it's not a topic, since it's not at the forefront of my brain, to come up, but I'm appreciative of it. And let's go into those feelings, go into those particular spheres of expertise, if you don't mind.
Sure, absolutely. Okay. So I would like to start with soul retrieval. But before we dive into that, it's almost like giving a little bit of a background.
Go ahead.
And in some ways, it's related to what we were just talking about with fear and moving ahead.
Right.
Because when we have a traumatic event in our life and something difficult happens, whether it's, you know, a traumatic event as a child or a loved one dies or something like that, we have a tendency to use different emotions and different aspects of ourselves to deaden that. And fear is one of them. Saying no, pushing that away is one of them. But in general, we try to deaden the pain and to not feel it anymore, because it's so painful. And in some ways, it's kind of like what we were talking about with fear. And your soul essentially goes into shock, just like your physical being would go into shock. If, let's say, you know, you get a trauma to your leg or something, you're going to go into shock so you don't feel that pain.
Right.
But again, it's not designed to be a permanent state. It's designed to be a temporary state, so then you can get out of that particular situation. And then after that, then deal with it.
So
a lot of times in today's day and age, what we have a tendency to do is to say, okay, if I don't feel that painful event from, you know, childhood or you know, adolescence or whatever, then that means that I've dealt with it. And in actuality, it's the exact opposite. That if you've completely subverted that feeling and you never deal with it again, although you might not be feeling anything from it, it's actually a really bad thing.
Well, it's overtly, you have to look at it this way. For me, I've described it to people as like having an infection that becomes an abscess. In other words, instead of cleaning up the wound and dealing with it, as you say, it simply goes beneath the ground or goes interior into you and then festers, just like a germ would or bacteria would, and it grows, but underneath the surface.
Yes, it can actually, when you're using the analogy of the body, it actually can affect your physical being as well.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. There's one lady I met recently who has absorbed from her friends and family their emotional illnesses. And I just looked at her and said, why on earth are you carrying somebody else's illness around with you? It makes no sense. Okay? Mm-hmm. And she stopped and thought and said, you're right, I have. She stuffed it inside, and as a result, she's gained weight. And she acknowledges the fact that this is what she did. So, yes, it can affect you badly.
Yeah,
go
absolutely.
Ahead.
and so the So one of the Native American views of this, they actually take this idea and go one step further and say, not only have you deadened a piece of yourself, but if you're in that traumatic situation, you've actually taken a piece of your soul and left it there. Left it in that place and time, so you no longer have access to that piece of your soul anymore. And as we get older, and we're, you know, 30, 40, 50, you know, years old, we've given away so many different pieces of our soul throughout these difficult situations that just happen to us on a, you know, life basis, that we're actually have very little to draw from as far as our original soul anymore. And so that kind of plugs into going back to the fear idea. That kind of plugs into the fact that many of us, as we get older and in today's society, we live from our minds and we use our intellect to try to figure things out, which of course, which is of course the wrong thing to do, because your intellect is actually a tool that that isn't designed to lead your life. It's a tool to be able to analyze and figure out certain aspects of it, but it's your soul and your intuition and living from your heart center that's really is what we're designed to live from. But since we've been giving away so many pieces of our soul, you know, throughout the years, we end up relying on our intellect because there isn't that feel anymore, that you know, that feeling anymore, because we don't have access to it anymore. So what happens in shamanic soul retrieval is that usually with the aid of a shaman, but it could be there's many other techniques that I can share as well, that one uses the term is called journeys, to journey back to that place in time and retrieve that piece of your soul. So journey back to the place in time where you had that original trauma, essentially relive it, and then retrieve it, come back and integrate it with your soul that you can actually use it on a daily basis. And so not only do you have more of your soul that you can feel with and intuit with, et cetera, but it also comes back with it the wisdom that you've obtained by going through that particular event. A lot of the most significant events, you know, negative events in our lives, or what we term as negative events, are actually designed by the universe to teach us a lot, whether it's, you know, going through and, you know, sort of karmic type issues, or if it's just life lessons or soul lessons. These are very important gifts that the universe has given us. And again, by deadening those and leaving them away, we're not able to use them. But when we retrieve them, and then it has that inherent wisdom, we can also then use that wisdom for our own life, and more importantly, then be able to help others with it. So that's in general what soul retrieval is all about.
Yeah, I am wondering if there are those who are homeless today, have been on the streets, and who have suffered a great deal, usually from early childhood, and addicts, drug and alcohol as well, if they are not suffering from just that, the splitting off of parts of their soul, so that there's not a whole person to help them to cope. I know most addicts do things to deal or deaden the pain of being alive.
And a lot of them say to fill that hole, and they don't really say what the hole is, but there is a hole that they feel like they need to fill.
Exactly, and so they do that because it keeps them from feeling. And that's my concept. As you were talking, that's what sort of came to mind, was exactly that portion. And so dealing with soul retrieval with those who have been so lost, shall we say. And a lot of them do suffer mental illnesses because of the trauma that they've gone through. It's easier to be insane or mad or out of their minds than being in their minds and feel the pain. It's how we tend to release ourselves, or to avoidance, I guess is a big word there, would be to avoid pain, yes?
Yes, absolutely. Definitely is. I think that it's not limited to just people that have issues with drugs, but that's a very good example.
I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. It was just as you were talking, that's what came to mind, I guess, because I ran up against some things this past week that would tend for to talk about that. Also, you know, in hypnosis and hypnotherapy, or neuromuscular reeducation, as it's also called, there is this retrieval of what we call the split-off parts of the human being. And it's one of the techniques that we are taught to use on people who are suffering so very much in emotionally and mentally. And I think also for those soldiers who come back from war, that a part of them is in need of this soul retrieval.
Absolutely.
Okay, because what they've gone through is horrific. The horrors that they've had to endure, I think, is very profound. And I think these types of techniques would help our boys coming back to integrate back into the real world, or the world that they left, so we say, our society as they were raised in it. But go ahead, let's continue. This is fascinating. I mean, you can apply this to so much of the life. It's not woo-woo stuff, ladies and gentlemen. This is absolute practical, everyday, common sense. How do we get along in life, and how do we make it, and how do we help our fellow man at the same time?
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. When you were saying, I'll give you some examples of how to apply this in everyday life in a moment, but when you were talking about the soldiers coming back, I had never thought that myself, and that is incredibly profound, what you were saying. The amount of soul-level trauma that someone goes through in war is unimaginable. I mean, that is the absolute worst thing that can possibly happen in this physical plane. I can't imagine anything worse than war, and being on the front lines and having to watch, you know, your loved ones, or worse yet, you being responsible for killing other people's loved ones.
Yes.
Is just, oh, I can't even imagine.
It takes a toll.
Oh yeah, I can't even imagine the toll that it's going to take, and the amount of trauma that somebody's going to have. That is the very reason why this, you know, soul shock happens, is to protect ourselves from that. You're talking about people going crazy. In some ways, people that have come back from the war and then gone crazy are probably closer to being sane than the people that aren't, because they're actually seeing it and dealing with it.
Right, exactly.
But of course, it's so haunting. They don't, that by themselves, how could you possibly get over that and assimilate that? I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
But it is possible.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Great.
And soul retrieval is definitely something that would be helpful for that.
Absolutely. And even whether you did it through shamanism or through hypnosis or Native American getting back in balance with nature like the Navajos do, all of this is valid, and it all needs to be dealt with. It's not all scientific and with our hands off. It's all very, very highly personal and very much a part of the psyche, because you can't deny that something happened, you know. It's just not possible. And also it shows that as mankind, we do feel very strongly that there is a connection to all other people, and the taking of life is a violation that is very, very profound. And, you know, there are times when indeed you do have to take a life, whether it's for self-protection and so forth. There are times when there is a decision that has to be made, and I'm just grateful in this lifetime it's not been within my life experience that I've needed to deal with that issue. For which I am profoundly grateful, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, likewise.
Yes. In another lifetime, I know I've been faced with this. But in this lifetime, I've been very blessed, and I guess that's why I don't have to go through it. I've been there, done that, and bought the T-shirt. So I don't need to go down that path anymore. At any rate, let's go on with soul retrieval. There are many benefits to that. Do you want to enumerate some?
I think that the main benefit that you get from soul retrieval is to really be able to live is to live intuitively and to live from your heart, because there's no one of the things that I find important in my life, and I talked about a lot in my book Waiting for Autumn, is that it's identifying that we all have our own personal destiny that we need to follow. And it's very difficult to be able to discern what our soul's destiny is without living from our heart. So
yes.
A lot of times, again, going back to living from our intellect, we have a tendency to want to say, okay, I want to be rich, I want to be talented, I want to, you know, have a great car, I want to, you know, do
things.
All of these different things.
Yes,
that,
things.
Yeah, exactly, to do and have things. When, of course, we can do that because we do have free will. But
right.
When we are going after those types of things that aren't inherently in our personal destiny, we're
right.
essentially fighting against the current. As opposed
mm-hmm.
to when you surrender yourself to your
uh-huh.
personal path, then it's like floating downstream and it's effortless.
Exactly. Like,
but if we say, okay, I want
to.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You don't have to paddle so hard.
Yeah, you don't have to paddle so hard. So at the end of the day, when you're going ahead and you're, you know, doing all of these things that may not be part of your destiny, and it doesn't mean that making lots of money isn't part of your destiny. It may not be. But but as far as if you decide that that's what it is and it so happens
right.
that it's not, you're going to go to sleep at the end of every day completely tired, not happy, and I'm just annoyed with the world all the time because you never have enough. And the reason you never have enough is because you're not actually surrendering to what you're on the planet to do this time.
And the reason I think, do most people have an overall soul view? Many people want to know what their mission is. And I guess there's just a very, very simple mission to help others, to serve others and serve ourselves at the same time, because when you help others in any way possible, whether it's a kind word, whether it is through donating of your time or working for nonprofits or whatever it may be, whatever you do in putting forth to help another human being, to me, that's your purpose here on Earth in whatever way it may be, whether it's being the CEO of a huge company that employs many people and gives them a living so they have a living wage and they can support their families, which is serving others, or whether it's just helping out your neighbor who may need a lift to the church or the store, or just weeding or cutting grass or just saying a kind word. I think that's where we are here, why we are here, and that's to serve others in any capacity that we may find ourselves. And it doesn't have to be grand and glorious. In fact, most of the time it isn't. Most of the time it's a very, very quiet. Do you agree? Or...
Yeah, I do agree that I would almost plug into the essence of our being. And I believe that, like, when we're talking about going back to the beginning about fear and different emotions mm-hmm. that we have, those are all created from, in my opinion, love. That love is kind of the raw
right.
Essence that drives us all, and that communion with others, that dialogue with others in love is I think what you're talking about, which is the helping others.
Yes.
But a lot of, and I think that's like a constant, and that's a given, and that's
yes.
kind of the founding, that's the founding building blocks that we're all built out of.
Right.
But I think a lot of people that talk to me say, okay, helping others, but as you were mentioning, you know, CEO of a large company, or you know, giving a homeless person some money, or saying a kind word, or smiling, or teaching your children, or all of these different things. Those actually are very good things, also, but they don't necessarily mean that you're following your soul's destiny. Sometimes, like for example, let's take the example of a CEO of a large company.
Okay.
Although they're helping lots of people by doing it, and they might in their own personal life be, you know, very positive. Like, I'll even take it one step further and say me. I wasn't a CEO, but I was executive vice president of a public company, mm-hmm. research and development, you know, with millions of dollars of budgets under me and 50 people working for me, et cetera. And I like to think of myself as, you know, a very positive person. I believe that I was, you know, helping these people. I would, you know, whenever there was budget reviews, I would fight for them and make sure they would keep their job, make sure they had good benefits, time
right.
off, and, you know, really think about them.
Yeah.
But But in actuality, and I would then spend the time, my spare time, meditating and doing yoga and trying to, you know, live a balanced life and do everything I could, you know, a loving wife, etc. But at the end of the day, that wasn't what I was supposed to do from a universe standpoint. And it wasn't until I was sort of hit on the head and, okay, I need to integrate this time when I was doing the meditation and the yoga with my professional life. And although I was having a good heart and doing, you know, doing good as an executive in a public company, it wasn't until I took all of that energy and all of that knowledge that I had obtained in the corporate world and then applied it to my, applied that to living a balanced life, that when we created De Leon, that's when we said, okay, we've now integrated that intention with the knowledge. And finally, we started surrendering to the universe and flowing in that direction. And now I believe, you know, on many levels, I'm much more successful than I was, you know, when I was an executive in a, you know, public firm.
Exactly,
so,
but did you not learn a great deal from that time when you were an executive?
Yes, absolutely. And the issue becomes what I was talking about before, about opening your heart up and opening your intuition so you can then start listening to the universe and feeling those cues when it's time to jump off of one path onto another path. And
right,
so for now, now all of my decisions are made, you know, with my intuition. At the time when I was working for, you know, that company, I was using my intellect a lot. And so I was saying, well, you know, but we have a large salary, we can't give away that, you know, we have this, we can't do that, we have this house, mortgage payments we have to worry about, all this stuff, which didn't matter in the long run, because what really mattered was surrendering to our destiny. And yes, that is our path. And our path might have included obtaining knowledge through this other traditional way. But when the path veers, it's time for us to veer too. And if we're thinking too much with our head, then we don't actually get a chance to take those, which seems like, you know, veering off to the left, when in actuality we're following our destiny.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you. There are times when we are forced off the path, kicking and screaming.
Right.
Sometimes. Been there, done that one, too.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to go that way. No. You don't understand. I don't want to go that way.
Yes, absolutely.
This is a marvelous. So you do this cell retrieval yourself? Yes.
There's many different ways of doing it. As I mentioned, the traditional way is to use a shaman, and I've had the opportunity to work with shamans in the past. But I would say some of the most profound soul retrieval that I've done, I've actually done by myself. And one of the things that have one of the ways that I've done it that helped me a lot, and I recommend for other people that if there's a traumatic event, if, you know, just get quiet with yourself and just say, okay, is there anything in my life that has been extremely traumatic that I haven't dealt with? And just be honest with yourself. Is there anything that I'm just avoiding, or I've succeeded, or I think that I've succeeded in avoiding for many, many years? And this particular idea is useful for issues that have happened to us in childhood or adolescence. So if there's anything that has been particularly traumatic from when you were a child, then do your best to meditate on that and to feel into that experience and try to conjure up as much of that experience as you can. You're not going to be able to experience all of it, but just try to think about it, try to do everything you can to just identify with those feelings.
Then replay it as though it were still existing.
Try to replay it as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's been a while, you won't be able to do it completely. There'll be a few missing pieces, but that's okay. Just make sure that it's conscious, okay? Then the next thing to do is to really fill yourself with the intent that I want to integrate that with my being, that I don't want it to be a separate part of me anymore, and I know that it's going to be painful at first, but I want to integrate that so I can carry that with me every day. Okay? As soon as you've done that, then get in the car or book a plane flight and go to the place. If you're not living in the same town that you grew up in, which many of us aren't, get on a plane and go to that very place. And if it happened, for example, in your childhood home, then do yourself a favor and go up to the door and knock on that door. You're going to, and then ask, and then tell them who you are. Say, I used to live in this house, you know, 20 years ago or whatever.
Right.
And I used to live in this house, and would you mind if I just looked around? You know, this meant a lot to me as a child, and I would just love to just look around and bring back some memories. 9 times out of 10, they will say yes. I've done it myself multiple times.
Oh.
We moved around a lot. And so then... And then just go through that, and those little pieces that had not been able to unlock before, you'll be surprised, you'll be shocked. They will flood into you, and you will then have those missing pieces, and it will then come into you. Now, you know, of course, that can happen in just a fraction of a second, but
right.
Once you leave, you're going to feel the part of you that part of your soul that was that wasn't with you is going to come back to you, and what you're going to feel as soon as that happens is it's going to feel very tender, almost
okay.
as if the wind will annoy it to the point where it will hurt. And so you're going to need to, like, nurture yourself, especially for the first, you know, few hours and probably for the first few weeks. It's going to feel like a very tender part of you. That's an amazingly great thing. That means you actually have that piece of your soul. But it hasn't. But it's been deadened for so long that it is actually
right.
tender.
Right, right.
And so that's okay. That's what it feels like. But go returning to the place where that trauma happened, you'll be shocked at how instantly it'll come together. I do that a lot, and I did that extensively in the years leading up to Waiting for Autumn, and that's what allowed me to be so honest with my emotions and my soul experiences, is because they were so fresh since I had just retrieved many of those situations.
Okay, that's
so
excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, so that's a practical way of everybody doing it themselves without, like, having to seek out a shaman.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But
that's
good. But
and
go ahead.
No, you go ahead, darling. You keep going.
Oh, all I was going to say is, but that being said, there's definitely another level of experience
okay.
that a shaman's going to bring to it. Usually, shamans aren't particularly, at least the ones I've worked with, aren't particularly bothered with what happened in this life or what happened in a previous life or what's going to happen in next life. To them, it's all the same because
mm-hmm.
time doesn't really, you know, matter to them,
right, right.
Especially when you're journeying. So in some ways, it's good to kind of get familiar with your this life trauma first as much as you can before getting into working with the shaman, because the shaman might give you information that might seem out of context because, like I said, they're not really limited by this lifetime.
Uh-huh.
But but that being said, you know, you can get really deep into other lifetimes, which in some ways brings us to what the second thing I was talking about, which was ancestral healing. But if you want to talk about
soul
retrieval some more.
Let's go ahead.
Okay, well...
ancestral healing.
Well, ancestral healing is going back to the concept of traumatic events happening and not dealing with them. That
in another lifetime.
In that lifetime. So, for example, if let's say somebody, if you have a traumatic event and you don't deal with it at the end of your life and
mm-hmm.
you die, those issues don't go away.
Exactly.
Just because you haven't dealt with them doesn't
right.
mean they've gone away.
Right, exactly.
And, I mean, just because you're dead.
Yeah,
so what happens?
Yeah,
so what happens is those issues are then transferred to your children and their children and so on until somebody in the ancestral line deals with it.
In other words, not just you yourself. It could be your aunt or your cousin or your grandfather.
Or your children or grandchildren.
Yes, it could be somebody else's issue in another lifetime.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. So to sort of restate what you were just saying there is when you're going through your self-healing and revealing all of these things, you might come to these places where you're like, I just don't understand why I keep coming up against this blockage, whatever it is. You know, this issue just keeps coming to me, and I've gone through all of my, you know, all of the things that I'm responsible for and all the things that my parents did to me, and, you know, I just don't understand. It's very well could be what's termed as an entanglement, that you're entangled with another issue from somebody, you know, in a previous generation. And so that's a very... Go ahead.
Like poverty issues.
Absolutely, poverty. Yes. Ancestral entanglements associated with wealth or lack of wealth is definitely a family line. In fact, for Daily Om, we're currently working on an online course about that very issue, about ancestral issues with wealth.
Because there is one in my own family tree. My mother had an issue that if you should only make so much money and no more. Something to be comfortable, and comfortable was an arbitrary amount that sounded good to her, okay? Whereas an aunt believed that women should not inherit money because women were supposedly not, it's a wrong thing to do to inherit money, that it's not a good thing for women to inherit money. It should pass to men. And I said, but look at the fact that you've had to struggle all your life because the money did not come down. And she looked at me, and then the light dawned. She was well into her 80s at this point. That she, you know, she kind of cut herself off at the pass, so to speak, by having an issue with thinking that women shouldn't inherit money. And she said, men should inherit it. And I said, says who? You know, and she couldn't get around the fact that someone had told her in the family that women shouldn't inherit money, men should. And that you should not make a lot of money, that if you buy property, you should sell it at the same price that you bought it. I said, then what happens to people who want to be philanthropic later on if you don't earn money to give it to others? You believe in giving to charity, but if you don't make it, how do you give it away, you see? And she had no answers to that, but it was just something she had accepted as a part of her background, you see. It was very interesting to see that and to understand, but... You know, these people came through the Depression, and I think that had a great deal to do with it.
Absolutely.
Of money. Okay, go ahead.
I think in today's day and age, we're going to be in a position to either learn from what happened in the Depression and the ancestral lines that have been passed on since the Depression, or repeat those. Some of those issues again, because I think we're given an opportunity to relearn some of those lessons right now.
I would like
economy.
To relearn them and be extremely wealthy. There's nothing at all wrong with being wealthy. In fact, you can just have more fun, and you just have more to give and share with others. The way I look at it, the more you have, the more you can share. That's the way I look at it.
I look at money as purely an energy exchange.
Certainly.
And so you're exchanging into a, you know, sort of a mediator type of a concept of money that then you can exchange for other energy. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that in the same way as, you know, having a conversation like we're having today. It's not anything different.
No, it is. It's just something that you use. It could be beads. It could be wampum. It could be shells. It could be anything. It's just that arbitrarily a piece of paper with cloth in it, which, you know, I find very interesting. But, money is simply an instrument or a tool to use, just like you would use a violin to create music or something else. It doesn't matter. At least that's my opinion. Now, I'm sure bankers are having hissy fits all over the place with this one. But at any rate, ancestral retrieval is a very, very interesting concept. And, you know, it's hard to grasp sometimes that this can affect us so profoundly. Many people say, well, why would that affect me? if it's not my personal bugaboo. So how do you explain it to them?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's the reason for that is quite simple, especially when we're talking about issues that hadn't been resolved, because of death. What it is essentially, as we are talking about an energy exchange, well, these traumas that have happened are essentially energy blockages. And so this energy is not flowing in one's life because this part of them has been, deadened, or, the soul has been left somewhere else, or however you want to look at it. But mm-hmm. the point is the natural flow of their life force is not flowing, naturally. And so, those energy lines is actually informing everybody in the family line, not just their own life. And so
right.
that energy, if it's blocked, we're then kind of in the same way that the with our own personal soul leaving it away, we're kind of living with less than a full deck, because that
yes.
energy, we don't have the benefit of connecting to that energy. And so a lot of times there are these energy blockages are so ingrained because our family line is purposefully trying to subvert that person, that person's history, by basically ignoring that they ever existed. So they might have, committed adultery or embezzled some money, or, God forbid, murdered somebody. But that whole issue, like murder, is a really good example, where if somebody killed or was killed by somebody, there's a connection that is one of the most
oh, yeah.
profound connections. That's kind of what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
That the universe has set up, and by trying to subvert that and not acknowledge what such a profound act, two of the most profound acts in our life is birth and death. And by saying, okay, they don't matter, and that person's death doesn't matter, or that person taking that person's other life doesn't matter in this family line. In fact, we're going to ignore it and not talk about it ever again. That's going to create such an amazingly intense blockage that's going to affect everybody in that family line, because
okay.
they haven't released that.
Okay, clarify that again for me. You're saying that, for instance, if one's father or grandfather or whatever, or grandmother, whomever, in the family tree was responsible for taking the life of another human being,
mm-hmm.
then that issue can be passed down to perhaps generations that have no knowledge of that, no, let us say, conscious knowledge of that
Absolutely.
Stain on the family escutcheon, as it were. Is that what you're saying? And that
yeah.
the ancestors, those who come after, must deal with that particular stain and deal with it consciously to release it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely. So that's
it.
That's
it. Can't identify it, even if you can't identify it as such.
Right. You probably won't have the benefit of identifying it at first without some other healing help. And so one of the ones that I found is the most profound way of dealing with ancestral healing is called constellation work.
I'm not familiar with that.
Well, I talk a little bit about it in Waiting for Autumn. Well,
right.
basically what constellation work is, it was created by a German psychiatrist named Bert Hellinger, and it's effectively spiritual theater. So you bring together a group of people into a healing space, and let's say that you have a constellation being done for you. You would then pick different people that are having that are representing the issue that you're having problems with. So let's say you're having a problem with it. Let's say your daughter acting out or something like that.
Okay.
So you'll pick somebody from the group to represent you, somebody to represent your spouse, somebody
okay.
to represent your daughter,
okay.
And then they would go into the field, and then the facilitator would then look at those people and feel into the situation, and then began to bring other people from the group to represent different people from the family line that they are getting information that need to be involved in. So they might say, okay, you know, your daughter, your you know, your wife, your husband, you know, yourself. And then they might say, okay, well, what about your father and your grandfather and your grandmother, et cetera.
Okay.
And so then they bring in all of these different people, and then they effectively act out what they are feeling. Those people in the circle to be, you know, without sounding too woo-woo, they're essentially channeling the spirits of these different entities that are brought in. So they don't necessarily have to be dead, living or dead, it doesn't matter, that they come in and then they begin to interact with one another. And then you sit, if the constellation is being done for you, you oftentimes sit outside of the circle and watch this theater unfold. And it's some of the most powerful healing I've ever experienced, and it's really, really incredible. And so this is one of the main ways to reveal and to expose and resolve a lot of these entanglements that we've been talking about.
Okay, and what would be the result then thereafter? What is tangible, and how do you know it works?
Well, I know it works. The first question is, what happens? And what happens is by acknowledging and honoring those people and those experiences that are happening in that's called the field, in the field of the circle, what you've done is then unblock those energy blockages and removed those entanglements. So the energy begins to flow. And everybody has their own place in the family line. So that's what happens on an energetic level. And again, that sounds kind of woo-woo, but it actually, if we go back to the whole idea of, you know, even money being an energy exchange, well, if, you know, somebody has locked the bank account because nobody knows that you are an actual descendant of this person, and therefore you can't withdraw any of that money, once it's acknowledged, and it seems totally secretive, but once that information is unlocked and it's now public that people know that you are actually a descendant of that person, that flow is unlocked, and therefore you can withdraw money from that account. It's a very similar thing for energy. Once that energy blockage is acknowledged and that relationship is honored between these different people in this particular way, then that energy can flow. And so you say, well, how do you know that it works? Well, I've seen constellations that have been about, you know, like estranged siblings where they haven't spoken in decades, and this person comes in, let's say, because they have chronic stomach problems, and you know, they don't even acknowledge this other person, but once the facilitators comes in, they say, okay, well, do you have any siblings? Yes, I have, you know, a sister, but I haven't talked to her in so long. Okay, bring this person in. And so then, you know, we talk to the sibling and say, how do you feel? It's like, well, I don't understand why I'm here, because that person doesn't, you know, that hasn't to me forever, and blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, how do you feel? Well, I want that person away from me. And then there's, like, you know, an issue maybe with, you know, physical abuse or something like that this person saw that they didn't tell their parents about, and, you know, these types of issues, right, that have come up. And they're really powerful experiences, and you're like, wow, I can't believe I'm watching this. And then afterwards, then they hug. And again, these are just representatives, right? But you're seeing this stuff, and you see the healing in the person that brought it up, and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe, you know, that my sister's been thinking about me all this time. And who knows if she actually was, right? Because, you know, they still haven't talked to each other, and they're, you know, still 600 miles away of each other, and blah, blah, blah. And then I find out a week later that this person that they haven't talked to for 20 years had called her out as a blue. And this is the sibling that called the person that had the healing, not the other way around.
Right. Okay.
And so these people that had never connected for decades are now coming together and say, you know, I don't understand, you know, why we haven't talked together. I'm really sorry, and I want to rebuild my relationship. I've seen this happen over and over again.
Okay.
It's just incredible how the energy moves, and people that aren't even involved and couldn't imagine in any way could hear about it are then healed, and their lives come around too. So you, when you're doing ancestral healing, you're not just healing yourself. You're actually healing your entire family line, and the benefits are incredible.
Okay, okay. Well, you're giving me the answers I asked for. we are coming. Would you believe we're almost an hour? We only have another moment or two. Let me ask you to please let people know how they can contact you and buy your book. It's been absolutely fascinating talking to you. And let people know, where can you go to get this kind of healing or start it? It sounds intimidating to do alone. It sounds more like it would be appropriate for groups. But, you know, please.
Yes,
that's
absolutely.
Well, a lot of
what we've been talking about today is discussed in my book, Waiting for Autumn, and you can get that at your local bookstore, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, or get it from my website, which is scottblum.net, and that's spelled scottblum.net. And some other general healing modalities that you can access on my day job website, which is Daily Om, and that's dailyom.com.
Okay, that's wonderful. And I'm so glad. Is there anything else you want to say in just rounding up this whole thing? When you were talking, I remembered the book, the story, because I read so many books, but I remembered afterwards as you started talking about the circle. It came back to me what I had read in your book as being fabulous. So I asked, how do you know that it works? And you told me the information that you saw it occur in people's lives. I think it's fabulous. And I would again recommend this book. I enjoyed it very much. I'm looking forward to the sequel whenever it's written. We'd love
Thank
to have you back
much.
On again, and wishing you the very best with your new little one, and the joy that you have in your child, and the joy that you had in helping other people with their lives in your journey, and helping others to find the journey in their own life. It's absolutely wonderful. Again, you can contact me, Phyllis Pricer, at my office, area code 202-387-2080, or you can always reach me through BBS Radio. I hope you have enjoyed this broadcast as much as I did. It's absolutely wonderful. It's a joy talking to you. And we will connect, I'm sure, again at another time and place. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll be talking to you again next week. God bless you. Have a wonderful day. Thank you, Scott. You have a great time. You here and enjoy your week and your child and your family.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.